Welcome to What's Eric Eating, Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map editor Eric Sandler. Today on the show, we'll talk about some news in the world of Houston restaurants, as well as our meals at a couple of new restaurants you may want to try. To do that, I'm joined by my co-host this week. He is a Houston hospitality veteran and a co-founder of the Houston Barbecue Festival. Michael Fulmer, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Fantastic. Thanks for having me here. I appreciate it.
Thanks for doing this. Let us dive right into the news of the week. Topic number one, Relish Restaurant and Bar is moving its River Oaks location, currently on Westheimer, to the RO, a new mixed-use development at the corner of Buffalo Speedway and West Alabama. This is a big project. If you drive in that area, you've seen them building it. And Relish is actually the first restaurant announced for the project, but there's going to be a luxury boutique hotel and offices and luxury apartments and some other stuff. But I don't know, Michael, you know, we've been to Relish together many times. So I don't know, what are your thoughts on Relish Restaurant and Bar?
First of all, I love the place. I'm there every month, and I dine there like on a regular basis, mostly for lunch. And they just do a great job in terms of execution and consistency, and the quality of the service there is great. And they've really made themselves part of the community. And, you know, the way I look at it is like, you know, Houston, for restaurants, you really want to cultivate regulars. And they've really done a great job doing that. And I count myself as one of them.
Yeah, this was a couple of years ago. I was trying to plan a brunch with my sisters, and I started throwing out ideas like, "Oh, we could go to Blue Door, and we could go to Hugo's. We could do, you know, the jazz brunch at Brennan's would be really fun." And one of my sisters is on a phone call, we're on a text thread, whatever. And she goes, "I just want to go somewhere normal." And I went, "No problem. I understand exactly what you mean." And I made a reservation at Relish, and that, and as soon as she looked at the menu, she said, "Yes, this is what I mean. Classic American fare, pancakes, omelets, scrambled eggs, whatever, whatever, bacon, sauce, you know, just all the normal stuff. Well done at a price that you're comfortable paying." And, you know, Relish does a great job with that. And they haven't said publicly why they're moving. And you know, the big problem is going to be that there's going to be a gap, because Relish will close sometime between now and the end of the year. And then this new location in the RO probably won't be ready until late 2027, maybe even early 2028. So there's going to be like almost a year when, if you want to go to Relish, you have to go to the Town and Country location. But I think if you've been to, anyone who's been to the Town and Country location, it's so much grander. It's bigger. It's got a raw bar. It's got a really nice, like, dedicated bar and lounge area. Looking at that Town and Country location and then comparing it to the River Oaks location, I am not surprised that Addie and Dustin T, the owners of Relish, were looking around for something that would keep them in the neighborhood, but that might allow the River Oaks location to match the niceness, for lack of a better word, the luxuriousness of the Town and Country location. So I'm not surprised by this decision. I am going to miss having Relish in River Oaks for a year or so, depending on how long this build out takes. But I do think, you know, as long as the customers kind of stick with them, like, they will be well rewarded when the new location opens.
Yeah. I you know, the idea of being closed for a year is problematic, but like, when do you get the perfect scenario where you're like, "Hey, I want to upgrade the space. We've hit on something and we want to further commodify it, and we want to offer more to our guests," and just making kind of a lateral move, you know, with very little interruption. That's a unicorn, you know? So I get that. I get there's things I'm not privy to as to why there'll be a delay. And, you know, and then I talked to someone in the real estate world who was telling me like, it's going to be all valet only and yada, yada, yada. That's down the road. We'll see what happens. Will I, like, when they reopen, will I be there? 100% I will.
Well, right. Absolutely. You know, and of course we'll support them in whatever location they choose. You know, I haven't heard anything about the logistics of this mixed use development. I mean, I know it will be upscale. I mean, you can drive past it. You can see they're building a pretty big parking garage. So I don't know exactly how, you know, whether that be open to visitors or valet only or all of those logistics. We're a year or more away from having to worry about any of that stuff. But in between now and the end of the year, you can count on me going to Relish. I mean, for a fresh salad for lunch, an order of fried chicken for dinner, pancakes for brunch. I mean, you know, this is a very reliable, very comfortable. I don't know if Allison Cook coined it, but she used to describe restaurants as useful when they're open all day throughout the day. They cater to your basic cravings. They are affordable. Like, you know, it's a useful restaurant. It's not the same as like, this is never going to be a restaurant in the Michelin Guide or anything like that, but it makes my life in Houston better. And so I'm excited that they're evolving, and I'm hopeful that this will be the right decision for them.
Yeah. Like, they're part of the community, and I think they'll continue to be. I know, like, they did have the parking issues because they share a parking lot with Chewy's, and it got so bad to the point where they had to hire security, and they painted a line in the parking lot. And you go, you have to park on this side depending on where you're going. And it got that kind of contentious.
Yeah, it got really contentious.
I think that's finally calmed down and they're okay. But like, could they use more parking? Could they use bigger space? Absolutely, they could.
Absolutely. All right, let's move on to topic number two. The Relish space won't stay empty for long, if at all. Island Grill, the family-owned Mediterranean chain, has already claimed the space. They plan to open in the spring of next year. Michael, what do you know about Island Grill?
Not very much, I'll be honest with you. I've never been. You know, I took a little look, gander at, you know, their menu and a couple of their places. And, you know, they're heavy on breakfast, and they're heavy on healthy items, too. So it can fill a little niche in that respect. You can't, in my book, you can't have enough breakfast joints, you know, and Houston is kind of always kind of lagged behind. But that neighborhood also has several good places. So we'll see how that goes. I know that Relish really did a good job of catering to the Upper Kirby, River Oaks clientele. You know, you'd see, you know, the cost of the cars out there dwarfed most people's yearly income, but they really took good care of those people, which is why the parking lot was always full while those people came back. Will those people go to Island Grill? I don't know if that's their audience. I don't know. I don't know enough about it.
Well, I will say Island Grill does have some experience operating in affluent areas. They started in that kind of Briar Grove Memorial area, you know, Woodway and Voss kind of vibe. Mm-hmm. I think that's their first location. They have a successful location in Rice Village that's been around for a while. They're up in Spring. So I do think that they likely have customers at those various locations that live in and around River Oaks and would appreciate having the opportunity to patronize an Island Grill closer to home. You know, in my snobby private school alumni perspective, you know, the Woodway and Voss location is the Kincaid location. And now we're getting a St. John's location to go along with it on Westheimer next to Chewy. So, you know, there's parity there. And I think that's really important because you got to keep all the various private school factions happy. Island Grill is a casual all-day cafe, Mediterranean inspired. You can get a pizza there. You can get a gyro there. You can get a burger there. You can get pasta there. You can get breakfast there in the mornings. JJ Watt has given it a shout out in the past. JJ is apparently a fan, so that's always good. JJ's got pretty good taste in restaurants.
Yeah, actually he does.
So,
he does.
So, you know, I think this is probably going to do very well, right? This is a restaurant that's been around for more than 20 years. It keeps growing, and I'm not surprised that they avail themselves of an opportunity to come to a neighborhood where they did not have a presence, but where the customers are probably likely familiar with them from their various other locations. So I can't say that I've had a lot of meals at Island Grill. You know, I've been once or twice. It reminds me a lot of Hungry's, you know, in that sense that it's, you know, Mediterranean, like sort of grounded in Mediterranean, but does enough American style comfort food that you basically anybody can find something to eat there. Vegetarians, you want a burger, whatever, they've got you covered. So, you know, I think this will be a welcome addition to the neighborhood also because like Relish, it's an affordable restaurant. And so with all of the luxurious options in that area, like the last thing anybody really needs is like another expensive steakhouse or fine dining concept. So I think actually in that sense, it will serve the neighborhood well.
Can we dare say this is a win-win situation?
It might be. It might be. It's a win for Relish. They're getting the the bigger, better new location that they want. And it's a win for Island Grill because they get to come into the neighborhood and keep serving people. So yes, we can say it's a win-win. It's a temporary step back for fans of Relish who will have to drive to Town and Country for their lobster roll cravings.
Yeah, I love a good cliche.
All right. Let us move on to topic number three. Houston Restaurant Weeks is starting Sunday, or rather Saturday, August 1st. It's coming up. Michael, give the people a couple of recommendations for where they might want to eat during HRW.
I love what she has done. Katie Stone has done, you know, as she's taken on the mantle of this, you know, this incredible event that happens in August, you know, that she inherited from her mother cleverly, and how it's expanded and how they've like adjusted on pricing, which is better for the restaurants and still serves the, you know, Houston Food Bank, which is all this about. And for me, Houston Restaurant Week or Houston Restaurant Month, the attractive thing for me there is really going to more high-end places and seeing some of their menu be a little more, you know, financially accessible. And yet almost every time I'm always going to order things off, you know, to the side or a supplement. You know, I'm a good case example of why that works is that you'll get me in the door and then I'll order more. And for me, I always go to BCN because they just kill it for Restaurant Week. You know, they have a good part of their menu, the suckling pig, a lot of their sides. The servers are fantastic. There's never that sense of, oh God, you want the restaurant menu. You know, it's great service and the food's fantastic and it's a great deal. So BCN's always at the top of my list. I've never been to Marmo. So, you know, that's a chance for me to explore something that's actually in my neighborhood that's maybe a little bit pricier than like just a normal venture for curiosity. And we'll see where that goes. And then I always like to patronize something that Tracy and Hugo are doing. So, you know, Hugo, whether it's Hugo's or Carolco or maybe one of the new places, it's always a good opportunity to go back there and enjoy their menu. But like I said, I really like what's happened to Houston Restaurant Week, Houston Restaurant Month.
You know, Houston Restaurant Weeks, the official name, Weeks with an S on the end. And what I will say is I had gotten to a point where I thought, oh, you know, maybe this has kind of run its course, you know, 20 years, raised millions for the food bank. Maybe it was time to call it. And yet it's been incredibly dynamic. I mean, you know, Aaron Bluedorn will tell you how much he likes having all four of his restaurants in Houston Restaurant Weeks. I think adding both BCN and Le Jardinet, two restaurants with Michelin stars, has been huge for the prestige. And, you know, you mentioned Hugo Ortega. You know, he and Tracy have been enthusiastic supporters. All of their restaurants are always involved. And so, you know, I think it's going well, it's going strong. And so I think there's, you know, vitality in this. And you mentioned, you know, they've tweaked the donations kind of in acknowledgement of the fact that restaurants are struggling a little bit. So instead of $3, $5 and $7 for the $25, $39 or $55 menus, it's $1, $3 and $5. So yeah, the food bank gets a little less money, but the restaurants get to keep a little more. That's all to the good. You know, you mentioned you've never been to Marmo. I happen to know that you've never been to Chardon. And that's one of the restaurants that's doing HRW, three courses, $55. Another new spot that I think people might want to try is Kirkwood out in the Memorial Energy Corridor area. I had a pretty good dinner out there about a month ago, 6 weeks ago. We talked about it on the show. It's a good opportunity to try Kirkwood. Also, Latuli. Brian Caswell is participating in Houston Restaurant Weeks. And then, you know, I saw actually that Brazil in Montrose is Brazil Cafe is doing HRW. I can't recall them ever doing that before.
Yeah, I don't recall either. I'm going to go there anyway.
There's a new general manager, our old friend Nate Rose. There's a new chef in the kitchen. And, you know, it's salads or a burger or half chicken or, and, you know, and you get dessert and stuff. But like, you know, $39 at Brazil. Like, when's the last time? I haven't been to Brazil in a long time. I'm due for a visit to Brazil. So HRW for dinner seems like a pretty good opportunity. And then the other one I wanted to call out is Camaraderie, which I have not been to recently, but that three course $55 menu is very appealing to me. And obviously if you if you just want to order their regular menu, then you get, you know, the shared apps instead, right? With HRW, you get the, you get an individual appetizer per person. But if you do their pre-fee, then you get prefix, then you get all of the appetizers. So that's the difference. But, you know, I throw that out there because I like that restaurant, and it's a reminder to myself really that I haven't been there in a minute and I should go back there for dinner.
I love Camaraderie. I love what Sean's doing there. And, you know, and look, I would just reiterate, this is a great opportunity to get in the door, you know, based on, you know, a little more financially accessible menu. But it's, like, if you're able to always keep an open mind to embracing some of the other things that their chef or that their restaurant group is doing, you know, off the HRW menu, because that can sometimes be really the most compelling.
Right. Yeah. Use the HRW as a starting point. And then if you see an appetizer or a shared entree or something on the regular menu, you can if you go with two or four, you can supplement a little bit and still kind of enjoy the savings that HRW provides while giving yourself the best possible experience at the restaurant.
Yeah. We all know Houston in August, you know, if you are of means and you can get out of town, you get out of town. So this really benefits the restaurants when they're at their slowest. And you always know Ben Berg is going to lean hard into it. I know Mazraff's is always a big part of HRW. So, I think it's really grown into something that's good for everyone involved, for the servers, you know, having more business, making more money, the restaurants bringing the people in, and the food banks still getting taken care of.
Absolutely. All right, Michael, I'm going to say that does it for the news of the week. We'll be right back with our restaurants of the week. Stick around. Michael, for our restaurants of the week, I want to talk to you about two places. Let's start with Charlet by Chef Austin Simmons. This is the new restaurant in the Hughes Landing District of the Woodlands from Chef Austin Simmons, who we know from his time at Triss. You and I have had many excellent meals at Triss. We've gotten to know Austin a little bit over the years. So we were very excited to go to Charlet. And so let me just throw it to you. I mean, what were your first impressions?
Well, first of all, I loved it. It's like an incredibly beautiful space. You know, lots of rounded corners, wood, without it being kind of touchy-feely. You know, the lighting is really good. It's got great recessed lighting. The AC, we went on a very warm night, and the AC was great. It was very comfortable in there. And it's a very open room, and this is a good-looking crowd, you know? So, yeah, can you keep to yourself? Can you just stay in your booth or your table? Yeah. But if you look around, it's like it's really vibrant. So great first impression in terms of walking in. And having gone to Triss many times, particularly for special occasion meals like, you know, my birthday, which I know you took part in, you know, we've all developed, you know, as you do with a restaurant, you know, a really good one, you develop relationships with not just the chef, but the dishes they do. And he brought back a lot of the greatest hits, you know, first and foremost being the crab cake, the kimchi crab that he does in brown butter. Just as good as I remember. So beautifully executed, just great, vibrant flavors and all that crab flavor coming through. So is it a steakhouse? You know, that's like the question we ask ourselves, you know?
Right. No, we'll come to that. But Austin said to me, you know, when I interviewed him for the article about Charlet opening, he's like, when he first thought about the restaurant, he thought, well, I'll leave all the Triss stuff behind. I'll come up with new dishes and I'll rethink it all. And then, you know, he was cooking these private dinners in between when Triss closed and when Charlet opened, and people wanted the kimchi crab and they wanted the watermelon salad and they wanted the sushi pizza and all of these other things. And so he thought to himself, if you go to see, what he told me is, if you go to see Garth Brooks, you want to hear the dance and you want to hear Friends in Low Places.
Yeah.
And, 100%. You know, not to say that he's as successful as Garth Brooks, right? One of the top selling musicians of all time, but people have expectations for him. And if they don't get kimchi crab, they're going to be mad about it. So
yeah,
I'm glad that he embraced that because I wasn't ready to say goodbye forever to those dishes.
No, and I get some chefs sometimes feel trapped by their own dishes. I mean, Chris Shepherd could have never taken off, you know, what was
Korean the goat dumplings.
Yeah, the Korean goat dumplings. I mean, like you just, it would be a riot, you know. I remember that back. I've seen that happen with other restaurants. What I really There's a lot of things I have to say about this, but I'll be brief in this moment. And that is what I really appreciate is that I'm going into kind of essentially a steakhouse experience, and I don't have to choose whether I'm going to go, well, do I want A5? Do I want Australian Wagyu? You know, do I want a Texas American hybrid? Do I want prime? You know, like steakhouses have been embracing the incredible change and growth in cattle and in beef offerings and in the quality. And that's exciting. That's great. But you know what? It's almost gotten out of control. And to see like someone like he's saying, you know what? I am leaning into Charlet. This is traditionally a French cattle that was, you know, originally brought to Mexico and brought over. And you always hear about Angus and Hereford first and then Wagyu hybrids. And you don't really hear that much about Charlet. But the quality of this beef is fantastic.
Right. And just to be explicit about this, he's raising the cattle. Like he has started a cattle business. And his rancher, you know, he's partnered with a rancher named Larry Ludeke, and they are raising the cattle together. And that is what is served at Charlet. Like,
yeah,
Austin has bred these cows for certain qualities, and that's what he's serving. So, you know, I have never met a chef more focused on the quality of the genetics of the beef and how it's raised and really getting his hands into it than Austin. And that's reflected in what you're eating at Charlet.
Yeah, he's not developed a great relationship with a rancher. He has become, in a sense, a partner and with the ranch, you know, and that speaks volumes. So you taste this beef, and if you're in, and I'm in, all I've really got to do is choose which cut and how hungry I am. And yes, you're going to see the traditional, you're going to see the strip, ribeye, filet, you know, listed as a tenderloin. But I love flat iron steak. I love Bavette, and my favorite, which is the Denver cut. These are all very well marbled with good texture. These are steaks that I buy from, you know, purveyors at farmers markets and sometimes at my own grocer to cook at home. And I love seeing them now appearing more in restaurants. And Austin is leaning hard into it. And boy, are they good.
Right. I mean, I mean, he served us a very decadent steak board with a big bone-in ribeye and his beef short rib that he cooks over. You know, he got a new Ember grill, slow cooked over these embers. But really, I think the best thing we had, I thought, was the flat iron in terms of its texture, its beefiness, its fat content, the flavor of it, the way it was cooked, and the picanha. You know, when do you ever see picanha outside of a Brazilian steakhouse? So to have that cooked differently than you would expect it at a churrascaria was very delicious. And I think that's what happens when you control the cows, right? And the way that they're butchered is you can offer some cuts. Right. You can offer cuts that most steakhouses either don't because they don't think they can sell them or because they don't have access to them or whatever. And so, you know, the steaks at Charlet were every bit as good as anything I remember eating at Tris. And you sort of asked that, is it a steakhouse question? I tend to think that it is, but there's enough seafood in the mix, right? Especially all the appetizers that we ate for the most part were seafood, the shrimp toast, the kimchi crab, the sushi pizza. You know, there's a lot of seafood to start. And then you have like a nice salad, either the watermelon salad or the wedge. And then you go into beef and there's a lot of beef to be had. Now, could you get the fried chicken? Could you get a burger? Could you get the pork chop? There's a couple of seafood entrees, but if I'm going to Tris and I'm going to have a dinner with the chef who's obsessed with the quality of the beef that he's serving, I'm ordering the beef.
Yeah, it's all pretty standard operating procedure for a steakhouse. They just don't have steakhouse to name, and that's fine. That's fine. There's one other thing that really impressed me, you know, because when you go into a pricier, you know, or a well-known place, you know, there is a certain level of expectation that's just unavoidable. And even though we had the highest expectations and we were, you know, in a very positive mood for that, he, you know, it's great when he still can kind of like throw something out there that impressed me. And he has, you know, something on his dessert menu called Mama Bear's Banana Pudding. Okay, sounds real homey. You know, he's taking a family recipe or a hybrid therein and he's bringing it to us. Okay, fine. Let's try it. You know, I've had a million banana puddings. It was fantastic. Like the brulee banana, the flavor, the texture, the cream of the mousseline. I mean, I've had variations on all these things, but man, this just all came together in a banana pudding like that I've never had before. And it was outstanding.
Well, and the way that it's sort of deconstructed, right? You get the big scoop of the banana pudding. And then he said they made their own vanilla wafers, which is just nuts. I mean, there's nothing about,
yeah, there's a lot of prep going on there.
Standard vanilla wafers that you would think like, oh, we need to improve upon this, but that's who Austin is. If he can gain, you know, 5 or 10% more delicious by making his own vanilla wafers, he's going to do it. So I thought that was really good. I like that strawberry shortcake that we had quite a bit. You know, we told him I missed the chocolate cake from Tris. I would like to see that.
You got to bring that
come back to the menu at some point. He said, you know, we got to, you know, hold your horses, essentially is what he told us. But a really excellent dinner. And one other thing is that the staff is really knowledgeable. Not that the staff at Tris was ever anything other than very good, but you know, for a new restaurant, they've really been drilled on the menu. They are able to recommend things. They can describe how things are prepared and how they're seasoned. And I thought that was really good, that they were very knowledgeable, very accommodating. And as I said, you know, off the top, right, we've known Austin for a long time. We were very much a known quantity. We were given a very VIP experience. But, you know, looking around the dining room, I think everybody was having a good time. You know, I like that moment where you see kind of neighbors like coming up to each other to chat. You know, it shows a lot of support from the immediate area. And I think people have missed Austin. They've missed being able to go to Tris. And they are very excited that Charlet has opened.
Yeah, the Woodlands is a very difficult place to be successful. You know, there's a reason why there's a lot of chains. It's just the tough clientele. It's a very well, you know, it's a very affluent clientele with all kinds of expectations. And Austin was always able to really plug right into that. And it seems like he's just picked up right where Tris left off and taken it to the next level. And yeah, I would agree with you on the service. There was several moments where, you know, you could see the staff. It wasn't just about knowledge. It's like, hey, where's the bathroom? They're going to walk you to it. I had a problem with my chair as we came in. It just wasn't quite, it was kind of rocking a little bit. They didn't try to fix it. They replaced it immediately. And like, it was all very seamlessly done. It wasn't like, allow me to do this. You know, when people draw this attention to them, like what they're doing for you, like, nope, they just did it. And that to me is a mark of really good service and a really good service culture.
Absolutely. And, you know, shout out to Giorgio Ferrero, their Austin's general manager, who was at Smith & Walensky back in the day and has worked at essentially every nice restaurant in the Woodlands at some point or another. It was good to see Giorgio. You know, the wine list is in good hands with him in charge of it and setting that tone for a really personal level of service that we really appreciated.
Yeah, I would love to see the wine list expand to be a little more commensurate with the quality of the food and the environment. I mean, there's some regular hits on there and there's some expansion, but it's, you know, it can definitely, there's a lot of room for quality growth there.
Yeah. And I mean, the liquor selection is extensive. You know, they may prioritize that. They could certainly build wine inventory. I mean, this restaurant's been open for a few weeks, so they've got plenty of time to build their wine list. You know, we always talk about, will you go back? I think it's obvious that both of us are planning to go back. You know, there are three different cheeseburgers on the menu, so I would like to make my way through those. I've seen pictures of the fried chicken. We didn't have it, but I would really like to try it. There's a couple other things on that menu. He's created new meatballs. You know me, I'm a sucker. I will always order meatballs. So there's some dishes on the menu that we did not get to try. So I think my instinct is that I'll be back sooner than later, even though, you know, it's basically a 45-minute drive from central Houston up to Hughes Landing, but it's well worth it.
Yeah, it's a commitment of, you know, it's definitely a traveling commitment, but well worth it. I'm just going to wait till the chocolate cake comes back and then we'll go have dinner then.
There you go. Works for me. All right. Anything else about Charlet before we move on?
No, that's good for now for me.
All right. Then for our second restaurant, I want to talk to you about Course by Chef Reginald Scott. This is a restaurant. It's just north. It's like a half a block too far north to be Independence Heights, but it's basically Tidwell and Yale, just outside the loop. We know Reginald Scott from The Smoke. We know him as a former winner of the Oxtail Mashup. Reginald was on the show to talk about Course and his career. But for him, this is a real step up. This is a fine dining style restaurant with a wide ranging kind of Southern influenced menu. I don't know. I think I've teed this up sufficiently. Michael, what did you think of our meal at Course?
Yeah, it really is. It's really interesting and it's impressive to see him take it up to the next level, because most of my interactions with Reginald have been in at barbecue events and at farmers markets when it's like, you know, it's hot out or he's working the grill, working the whole thing. And I'm deciding like, do I want brisket? You know, give me some boudin to go, that kind of thing. And this is white tablecloth. Now it's a small place. We're talking like what, 7 or 8 tables, you know, and it's a new place and this is summer and all of that, but it's very comfortable. Like the AC worked fine. Our server was just wonderful, incredibly gracious, very enthusiastic without being, you know, oppressive with it. You know, it's like there's a line between that and she didn't cross it. And she had good suggestions for us. Like, I love how it started with the chicharrones. And we've all had chicharrones before, and sometimes in nice settings and more casual ones. These were just crispy, flavorful. The hot sauce was fantastic. Great way to start. A lot of the menu had, you know, like is leaning hard into some of his, like what he's grown up with and elevating, if you will, like as we saw with the fried green tomatoes. I will say like a total miss for me was the Caesar salad, or what he called a Southern Caesar. Nothing about it is a Caesar salad at all. And on top of it, I didn't find it very appealing at all. So that was like a hard miss, but that's okay. I mean, you're not going to knock it out every time. And then for me, the dish that really stood out, that the dish of the evening, I think you'll agree with me on this, was the fried chicken. He did a beef tallow fried chicken where he smoked it beforehand. And I've certainly had this, but he does not bread it, keeps the skin on, fries it in the beef tallow. You get all the sauces and these jalapenos that have been pickled and then smoked. And you think, you know, can smoke flavor, you know, get on top of, you know, all the, into that acidic or vinegar quality? It definitely could. And man, that is some of the best fried chicken I've had in Houston.
No, I thought the fried chicken was very clearly the dish of the night for me. I'm with you. The Caesar, it just didn't make sense to me. It doesn't taste like a Caesar. It doesn't look like a Caesar. I don't quite understand what he's doing with that, but that dish aside, I thought that there were plenty of highs. The chicken obviously was the favorite, but the fried green tomatoes were quite good. That brisket, he calls it ramen, R-A-Y-M-U-N.
Yeah, right, the ramen, but
the,
right?
The ramen noodles with the brisket from his barbecue concept. I thought the brisket was nicely smoked. It had a good flavor. It was well rendered. It made sense with the soup broth and the noodles. I enjoyed that quite a bit. You know, we had a cornbread that I like quite a bit. The
really
biscuits with the chicken were really first rate. And then, even the dessert, you know, I'm not always a big bread pudding guy, but I thought the bread pudding worked really well. And this is not, you know, I think our order of chicken, which was certainly enough to feed two of us, was like in the 30 something dollar range. You know, it wasn't crazy expensive. I think Chef Reginald's really up to something here. And I think, because of the location, I think it's probably flying a little bit under the radar. I know Sean the Food Sheep gave it a very enthusiastic review on his feed recently, but I was impressed. And I hope that more people make the journey and discover this. And because there's always room for more cool Southern restaurants, right? We don't, you know, the recent closure of Olamai in Austin, or Olamai, really like illustrates that, you know, this food movement, it's maybe that kind of ran from the mid aughts into the 20 teens, maybe losing a little bit of momentum, but it's still one of my favorite ways to eat. So I'm glad to see Reginald doing this, and I really hope that more people embrace it.
Yeah, me too. Cause like the website doesn't have a menu. Matter of fact, you don't even really, it's all done kind of on social media. Yes. They have a phone. You can make a reservation and they're accessible online. I would end with this as two things. One, would I go back? Yes, I'll answer that question right away. Two, I loved his plating. His plating was really well done. It wasn't trying to draw attention to this up, but it all made sense. And, you know, as we're saying this over the air, but you do eat with your eyes first. And it was all very visually appealing,
except for that Caesar salad that didn't make any sense. Yeah. And Either don't call it Caesar salad or make it actually more like Caesar. So one or the other, whatever it is. But the man, that chicken was so good, and I would go back for that, smoked and then fried. It's not the first time I've seen that done, certainly, but it is a very delicious way to make fried chicken, and I'd go back just for that.
Yeah, like I really like making the decision not to bread it, you know, and just keep it fried as that was just, you know, I think it was brilliant. And just the flavors, the textures really come through beautifully. Just really all around good execution with that.
Absolutely. All right. Michael, I'm going to say that does it for our restaurants of the week. Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for having me.
That's it for today's show. Thank you so much for listening. Join me on Thursday when my guest will be Paul Friedman from The Chef's Table.